This is The Guardian.
I'm Jane Lee.
And I'm Matilda Bosley.
And this is Who Screwed Millennials?
Over the course of this podcast, we've taken you on a very big journey.
Through four decades of economic policies that have led to the crisis young Australians face today.
We wanted to find out what went wrong for young people in housing, in the workplace, in education.
And now that we have, we want to know what we can do about it.
So today we're asking how millennials can unscrew themselves. Look, we know that the situation at times can feel dire, which is why we made a habit of, at the end of all our interviews, asking the experts not just if a bright future could exist for young Australians, but also what their advice was to make sure we get there.
They're always telling us to vote or volunteer or all these different things that are not really going to affect the change that we need to make, which is a real fundamental revolution in society's values.
Author Malcolm Harris suggested we think big, knock it down and rebuild it better.
And so whatever you're doing, they can always tell you to try doing something else, but they'll never tell you to step away and actually think about how we can change the whole system itself. And I think that's really the only option we've got.
And you do have to have people kind of pushing for the most radical vision, and maybe that, you know, that is tear it down and start over.
While others, like writer Jill Filipovich, put more stock in meaningful incremental change.
Because we need to improve things where we sit. And so I think you need both of those efforts happening at the same time.
Well, look, young people do not want advice, especially from old people like me.
Yanis Varoufakis, the former finance minister of Greece, says young Australians should hold on to hope about what the future might look like.
Every generation feels that the end times are nigh, and every generation is proven wrong.
But also that our discontent can be productive.
Allow me to go back to a long-dead Irishman, George Bernard Shaw, who said that there are two kinds of people, two kinds of young people. The sensible ones, he said this ironically, of course, who are trying to adapt themselves to the world around them, and they're the mad ones who try to adapt the world to their own ideas of how it should be. Be mad.
I can say what young people shouldn't do, which is move away from politics or completely disengage from politics, because that's not going to do us any good.
Dr. Intifar Chowdhury, a youth researcher at Flinders University, says young people are already following Yanis's advice.
I think young people are becoming more politically aware, more politically sophisticated, but also engaged in a different way compared to previous generations.
Young people care about the issues that impact them, and they're getting mad, and they're letting everyone know about it.
Uprising! No more compromising! The youth!
Thousands of school students have staged protests around the country demanding greater political action on climate change.
Everywhere we turn, there is a fight, a battle to save something, to protect something, to bring awareness to an issue.
So if I care about the environment and go to like a climate strike, I am very political and I'm taking a stance.
It makes me sad and it makes me mad to think that it is all being destroyed for crops.
Movements like the Black Lives Matter movement.
17-year-old Rosemary student activist and advocate for First Nations mob. Dedicate my time to healing country by organising students across the nation.
Why am I pissed off? Because as a woman of colour, as a woman, I don't have all the same rights that men do. Sometimes on paper we do, but in reality...
Me Too movements.
Enough is enough!
Hence the 2022 election, right?
In an election driven largely by concern over the climate emergency, voters Saturday elected Anthony Albanese of the centre-left Labour Party.
Youth was one of the big movers. that led to the Labour win and the coalition loss.
Described as a green slide, with voters largely backing candidates pushing for stronger climate action and against Morrison's pro-coal policies.
The solidarity there, if there are 10 other people who are facing the same issue as you are, although you are kind of thinking about yourselves, which is true, we all think about ourselves first, but 10 other people are also sort of mobilizing based on that same issue.
So there's some hope.
There is some hope still, I like to think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So to discuss the practicalities of what this new, more hopeful world for young Australians will look like, we are joined by two of the podcast's most frequent and treasured guests, elder millennial and Guardian political reporter Amy Romikis.
We need some hope, right?
And self-proclaimed beaten-down Gen Xer Greg Jericho, who also happens to be the chief economist at the Australia Institute and a columnist here at Guardian Australia.
No, I'm pure Gen X, born of a pure baby boomer, so I'm Gen X royalty, really.
One thing I think we've all learned from making this podcast together is that life for millennials and Gen Z looks really different to the generations that came before us. So it kind of makes sense that the way young people engage in politics today would be different too. So Amy and Groggs, what does that change look like?
At the moment, it looks like not being rusted on voters like their parents. It really is an issues-based vote that younger generations tend to go on. And we're seeing that play out with millennials because, sure, you know, everyone starts off bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, you know, fighting for what's right. The difference, though, is that we've got nothing to conserve. So we're not going conservative. Instead, we are looking at the issues and the parties and going, who is most aligned with my reality on this? And so you're seeing that play out with millennials and you're seeing that play out with Gen Z as well, which is going to be a huge challenge for the major parties because they're pretty much used to baby boomers onwards to sort of voting for them because their parents voted for them or because they like the tax policy or whatever. Suddenly they're faced with this entire flipping, flopping voting block who were saying, actually, sure, we might have voted for you 3 years ago, but you've done nothing for us. So we're actually, you can't count on our vote anymore. And we're going to go look elsewhere, which I think is quite exciting.
Yeah, and also very demanding of their politicians in a way that certainly I don't think my generation was, probably because Gen X was just beaten down and destroyed by life. Certainly Gen Z and, you know, Greta Thunberg's a perfect example of, no, I'm not going to wait till I'm an adult and I'm able to work in a decent job and actually be in a position of power. No, I'm going to do it right now. Stuff you. I've got social media. I know how to use it. I know how to use it better than you guys do. I'm going to use it and let's do it now. I mean, you know, things like the school strike for climate are just so incredible to see. And, you know, a few years ago when my daughter was at high school, I sort of took her along to one and let her go. And it was like, wow, there is a energy that I don't think we've seen for maybe ever. and also a realization that they're running out of time, especially on things like climate change. But also they're looking around going, yeah, I ain't getting a house, so I'm not living in your world and I want it to change and I'm not patient at all. And I think that should scare the hell out of politicians, and it's about time they got scared about it.
I mean, we're talking about, like, young voters are making up about 43% of the electorate at this point. How much is that going to shift the playing field?
Well, it is going to shift the playing field because politicians are going to have to stop all the boomer-friendly policies and actually start coming up with policies that are more friendly to generations who are going through all of these challenges now. They are behind on that because when you talk to any politician or you listen to how they talk about debates, be it climate, be it tax, be it housing, you know, be it gender, be it working, anything, they are still framing it as John Howard would have framed it, because that has been the predominant way we do politics in Australia, right? Like, what is going to make John Howard's battlers happy? If you make them happy, you might actually win government. That's not the case anymore. I mean, the federal government is talking about renters' rights. That is not out of the goodness of their heart. That's not because Anthony Albanese woke up one day and went, gee, it's really hard for renters to actually get a proper property and have some equal rights to use it as a home. It's because a lot of young people went, oh my God, what are you doing? And the Greens went, yes, we will represent you in that. The independents who were elected, all from wealthy areas, didn't get up and just go, oh, you know what? It's quite challenging for people to be able to pay back their hex degrees. We should look at that. They are doing it because people are screaming at them in their electoral offices that they can't actually get ahead because of the way that they're paying back an increasing university debt. All of these screams are actually leading to the change. So this anger is driving positive change. It's just going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah, I mean, a really good example of how a lot of the major political parties are still stuck in the John Howard frame of things is clearly the nuclear power policy. I mean, what the hell? You know, it's anyone who really gives a damn about climate change and actually thinks it's real is looking, this is just idiotic. This is a 20-year-old argument getting rehashed and it's coming out looking pretty flat.
So this series, we've been looking at the big historical turning points with the benefit of hindsight. But what are some of the biggest policy debates that are happening right now that'll most determine how our generations and future generations are going to face?
Well, climate has to be number one because the planet is burning. And if we don't address that, then what's the point of us having this conversation?
I mean, what is good climate policy? You know, we talk about these kind of potentially milquetoast changes. What should younger people be looking for?
Yeah.
Yes, Greg Jericho of the Australia Institute. Do you happen to have any ideas of what good climate policy could look like in this country?
For a start, how about no more coal mines? I mean, that's pretty easy. I mean, it's the lowest hanging fruit there is. No more coal mines. Look, the main thing is we actually got to be acting like it's actually an urgent issue, like treating it like it is a crisis, acting like, gee, how did we act in World War II when we actually needed to get something done that was a crisis? We cranked stuff out. We did it.
But it doesn't always get done perfectly, right? I mean, we've been talking about that this whole series, and I remember distinctly speaking to you, Grogs, about transitioning in the 80s away from manufacturing and towards services. You know, in the context of climate change, is there a just and good best practice way to transition away from coal and also stimulate the economy?
Oh, yeah, look. There certainly is many ways in which you can stimulate the economy, but you've got to look at the other side of the equation. What if we don't do anything? What if the economy? Who gives, you know, it's all these talks about, what's going to happen to productivity? What will happen to average wage growth? I mean, if we get climate change increases as are being forecasted, all this talk about, productivity growth and average wage is all going to be absurd because we're going to be in a planet that is not able to produce enough food. We're going to be actually having catastrophes. You've got to have some sense of urgency. And the problem is the governments are all like, oh, it's a massive problem and we really got to do something. And here's this very, very, very small thing. And, you know, please, hopefully there are no losers from this.
There is a crunch coming. There is a crunch coming with voters. There is a crunch coming with the planet. And there is a crunch coming with the economy.
Mm.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because why are we so obsessed with economies continuing to expand and continuing to grow? Who is it actually serving? We don't need you to keep burning the Amazon to keep the global productivity growth going. What we actually need you to do is work with the resources that we've got and work out how you best distribute those for an economy that keeps people in work, in housing, and in health, and for a globe that can actually start to see temperature levels stagnate. That's climate policy.
And look, to be honest, there's so actual few jobs in the fossil fuel industry in Australia that really you could almost get to the point of a government saying, right, we'll just cover your lost wage. I mean, and it'd still be a better option than what we're doing now.
Speaking of waiting till things are an immediate, pressing, life-ruining problem, housing, what are we seeing there? Is there movement? What's going to happen? How do governments have to act now?
There will be changes for renting conditions in Australia. That is inevitable, because there's going to be people who rent for the rest of their lives. And Australia's housing policy was not set up for renters. That doesn't mean, though, that there's no hope, because younger generations will be able to benefit from the fights that we're having now. That will be in better renters' rights. You're going to be seeing more of those sorts of policies come through, just because society is changing and politics will eventually catch up to it. You will also see supply changes happening, because they're already happening now, where people are starting to go, okay, we actually do need to free up some more land. You're seeing governments slowly come back into the social housing space, which is not an area I think they should ever have really, you know, vacated from. And you're starting to see different ideas pop up when it comes to negative gearing and capital gains and all of those other things that have contributed to us being in this position now. You are going to start to see those changes. It's just going to probably take the next 10 years or so.
Amy's right. The problem is, for some generations, I think millennials are kind of a bit, they're going to be the lost generation.
We're taking over from Gen X.
Yeah, I mean, but Gen X,
they were just the forgotten generation.
We were forgotten, but at least we were able to get in the housing market. You know, we were able to buy the 2-bedroom townhouse. Then when we had a kid, we had the 3-bedroom, and then we sold that and went up to the 4, you know, as you should, as should happen. But the problem is, even for millennials, like, you know, to be honest, they're not young anymore. And this,
gee,
is...
thanks a lot, Grogs. It's fine.
Yeah, well, hey,
gee, it's a real way to rub it in right now.
Hey, I've been quoted in an article as a middle-aged person who likes Taylor Swift, so I've got you all covered for embarrassment.
I got asked for ID the other day. I'm fine.
Gosh. But, you know, millennials aren't 20, and the older you get before you buy that first house, the longer you realise I'm going to be in debt when I retire.
Well,
do I want that?
Well, they are asking millennials now who are buying their first house, you're going to be beyond the average working age by the before this loan term is up. How are you going to pay this off? And every millennial I know who's done it has gone, my super?
That's
pretty much all that we've got, which means that we are going to see all of these societal changes, all because millennials got screwed.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Jane Lee here with a quick note about The Guardian. As you probably know, Guardian Australia's journalism is editorially independent, which means we set our own agenda. We don't have a billionaire owner, we don't answer to shareholders, so we're free from commercial bias. And this independence matters, because it means we're able to challenge the powerful and hold them to account. Unlike many news organisations, we haven't put up a paywall. We chose a model that means our reporting is open to everyone and funded by our readers and listeners who can afford to pay. Every contribution, whether big or small, counts. So if you're able to support us, head to theguardian.com/support/fullstory. There's also a link on the Full Story page. Thanks.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
It's important to note that not all millennials got screwed, right? Like, some of us do have something to conserve because of our wealthy parents. You know, that's the way generational wealth gets distributed down the generations. So it's a really interesting time because as young people come of age and are starting to become more political and figure out where they stand on all of these policies, I wonder how we think we will all use this newfound political power. Will we be using it to serve our own short-term interests as many others have done before us? Or are we going to try to look out for the next generation and further down the track?
Are we the new boomers, really?
You know, certainly younger people will still care about their selfish issues, in a sense, but their selfish issues are going to be different to what previous generations were caring about. Like, a boomer or even a Gen X caring about climate change didn't seem all that selfish. It sounded like, oh, you're caring about something for the future. For my 20-year-old, that's caring about her life, you know. So it's a completely different outlook. And it's the same with housing. They're going to care about housing, but they're caring about a different point of view of housing than Gen Xers, than boomers did. They're still caring about their own thing, but they're going, yeah, I can't even rent anywhere near where I want to work. That's a very different concern and thinking about how you vote than someone saying, oh, I've got a house. I don't want you to change the tax laws so that my ability to then get a second house is going to be taken away from me. You know, it's so... You know, when we say that they're not getting more conservative, it doesn't mean they're less caring about themselves and more caring about everyone else. It's that these global issues are affecting them.
But I think to Jane's point about, you know, inequality, like where the rich get richer and the rest of us just basically have to put up with it, there is always going to be that. And it is going to become more entrenched because if you have richer parents, you're going to be left with either the Bank of Mum and Dad, which is, you know, I think one of the largest lending facilities in Australia right now. And I don't mean that facetiously. I mean, that is how most people are getting into homes and through inheritances. The difference, though, is that the money doesn't go quite as far. So while that boost may have made their parents raise a class and go into upper class, for their children, they will still be middle class, even with the people who are wealthier, because they're not going to, you know, suddenly be flying first class everywhere. They're just going to be able to afford a $2 million mortgage, but they'll still be considered middle class. And it's obviously a huge problem for people who don't have that wealth, who will be stuck in lower socioeconomic classes without any of the opportunities that come along to sort of raise you and your family out of that. And I don't mean that suddenly you can eat at nice restaurants. I mean health outcomes, educational outcomes, all of the things that come along with having more access to resources. That is going to be an increasing chasm. The ends have kind of shrunk, like the top end has shrunk down with all of the policy changes that we've seen for boomers.
Drawing a close on this massive, giant discussion that we've been having right now and Jane and I have been having for the better part of a year at this point, you know, if you could speak to young people right now and they want to go out and do something, what's your advice to them? What do they need to do to actually make a difference?
Look, taking to the streets is a damn good thing, but unfortunately we're seeing governments increasingly ban that activity, especially
with things like climate
change. Yeah, but really keep the fire burning in terms of your passion and realising that you don't have to wait for things to change, that you can actually make change happen.
Don't just vote for people who are going to make the changes you want. Be the people who are running for parliament who are going to make those changes. There is nothing stopping you once you turn 18 from running for parliament. You do not have to join a political party. You can start a movement, because the thing is, the moment you start to speak up, you learn you're not alone in this, and that you have so many people who feel the same way and want to make those changes happen. And when you band together, suddenly you have a lot more power than you think you do. And one of the biggest falsehoods about democracy is that you do have to wait, and that you do not have power as an individual. Oh, I'm just one person, what can I do? You're never one person, ever. And that is actually what has our politicians so scared, because there are movements happening that are completely separate to what they're doing. And that is where the true power lies.
Thanks so much for your time, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Groggs.
It was a pleasure.
This episode was presented by me, Jane Lee.
And me, Matilda Bosley.
The producer was Miles Herbert, who's also the series producer. Sound design by Joe Koning and mixing by Camilla Hannon. Our executive producer is Miles Martignoni and commissioning editor is Gabrielle Jackson.
Beautiful.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.